Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry, of course. Join us as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Your hosts along this journey are Terry Farrell, our enchanting science officer, Armin Shimmerman, our beloved entrepreneur, Garrett Wong, our forever ensign, and myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil. Today we have Armin with us. Good to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Of course you're here for the Negus episode.
Of course I am. Of course I am.
There's no one else to be here for this Negus episode. Armin, I'm just going to start right off the bat. Is this the beginning of the rehearsals at your house? Was for this one or later on did it start happening?
No, sir. Earlier on.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
It wasn't just that I was working with Ferengi. I also worked with Renee. I worked with Odo before these episodes. It's my theatrical background. We don't get enough rehearsals on the day of the shoot. So I just, and the prosthetics made things difficult. So I just wanted to be ahead of the curve.
All right.
Good for you. Garrett, I don't know if you know this, but I rehearsed this podcast on my own.
Really?
I spent all weekend rehearsing this podcast so I could be prepared.
So you get all your lines correct the first time out. Yeah.
Exactly. So while you're rehearsing, do you also play me and Armin and Terry as well?
And Terry, yes.
So
I
you
do.
Talk to yes. yourself. That's wonderful.
I have to, but it's yes.
I don't care how you play me, but I'd love to see how you play Terry.
Yes, I'd like to see that.
Okay. That'll be a bonus feature we will release. We got to talk about some birthdays. All right. We've got a few birthdays around this episode here. Mm. We've got Lee Lyle on February 13th. Happy birthday, Lee.
Happy birthday, Lee Lyle.
Happy birthday, Lee.
Lee Lyle. It's so easy. It just comes trippingly off my tongue. Yes. And also, we must say happy birthday to Paul Johnston, February 13th as well. Happy birthday, Paul.
Happy birthday, Paul.
Mm-hmm. And another birthday on February 13th, Rich Gross. Also on February 13th.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
We have one more birthday. Holly Smith, happy birthday to you. February 16th. Holly, we love you.
Happy birthday, Holly.
Happy birthday, Holly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, let's talk about this episode, The Negus. We can start with our poetry synopses.
Okay.
I will start with my limerick just to kick it off.
Do it.
Here we go, my poetry synopsis for The Negus. The Grand Negus arrives from afar and makes Quark the new Negus bizarre. Jake's behavior needs a troubleshooter, though he's just Nog's school tutor. In the end, Quark's back to running the bar.
Oh wow. That's a nice one.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Really tight. All right. Here's my haiku for the Negus. The Negus has landed. Negus Quark must watch his back. Rom has a backbone.
Okay. Good. Very good. It's very, actually, I think it's the first time we see Rom's backbone. Yes.
That he has some resolve in him, right? It's like, my goodness.
I want to hear the definition. What did you choose to define?
I thought this word was made up, but I decided to look it up anyway. And I was enormously surprised.
What?
There is a word that is negus.
Yes.
It comes from the old Scottish dialect. And ironically, it means a miserly person.
Interesting.
I had no idea that's what the word meant. None whatsoever until yesterday when I looked in my Oxford English Dictionary and went, oh my God, there is. It's a very small citation, but there it is.
An old Scottish word, negus. Now that you say Scottish, it sounds kind of
negus.
Well, negus. Is it pronounced differently in Scotland? Does it rhyme with haggis? So is it the nagus?
Nagus. Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm going to get in the weeds here very quickly. Pronunciations have changed radically over the course of, because this first the citation was in the 1500s that I found in the OED.
It's the Middle Ages. So, yeah, it's a while ago. Yes. Well, no, not even that. It's
No, it's before, it's after the Middle Ages.
It's after the Middle Ages.
But it could have been there during the Middle Ages. But pronunciation of words have changed radically. It's what makes the teaching of Shakespeare so interesting, because the words, the sound of the words has changed over the course of 500 years.
Yeah. Miserly person.
Did it have a pronunciation in the OED for that, or
if it did, I couldn't read it. Actually, I don't remember there being a pronunciation key for it. But that's one of my failures. I don't know how to read a pronunciation key. So
Nagus. That's it. It's amazing that it's a real word, and I'm curious if the writers actually found it as a real word and then used it, or if they just made up a word that happened, like you said, coincidentally to be.
Yeah, I always thought it was a rift on magus, which means a miraculous conjurer, or someone of that sort. So I always thought it was that. That's why yesterday was a total surprise when I looked it up and went, oh my God, it doesn't actually mean what it could mean, a miserly person.
Armin, magus means magical conjurer? Is that what you said?
Yeah, a magus is somebody who's it doesn't have to be per se magical, but originally it had that connotation. It was a magical conjurer. Like Merlin would be a magus.
Okay.
Interesting.
So then you could say a negus magus is a miserly magical.
You could.
Conjurer.
A negus magus.
Negus That's magus. Right. Yeah. Okay.
But please don't write that in a script where I have to say it. So
yes.
No tongue twisters, please, especially with Ferengi teeth. We don't want it to go
precisely.
There.
Precisely.
Yes.
All right. So we got teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the first script I've seen his name on, or do I just not remember? I have a bad memory.
I think he's been on others before, but it's
not teleplay, maybe.
Maybe not teleplay.
Yeah.
I feel like this may be the first script.
Yeah.
And what I find fascinating is the story
came
from David Livingston.
Oh my God. I flipped when I saw that. I said, what?
I know.
He sold this story to the
And he directed it.
And he directed it. Yes, exactly.
And I do want to say this is the first time he's directed your show. This is the first one that I recall.
Could be, yes. I would have to go back and check my notes, but it could be.
But yeah, very unusual for David Livingston, who was a producer. He was a line producer.
Supervising
producer. Mm-hmm. And then turned director.
And I believe has directed more Star Trek episodes than anyone else. Although I think Frakes may be breaking that record. But certainly for years, David had directed more Star Trek episodes than anybody else.
So he's DGA, WGA, and PGA. Is that right?
Probably.
Well, we were on the strike line. Told me he was also SAG.
And
SAG after.
He's SAG as well.
Yeah.
Gosh.
He did a little of everything. Well, I have to just give my opinion about this.
Yes.
As I watched it, it's my favorite direction so far on your series.
Interesting.
Including the pilot. I thought David did a phenomenal detailed job with transitions, with shot making. It just didn't feel like meat and potatoes. He had a point of view and was doing some really interesting things, and I'll bring up some of them, but I think David did a phenomenal job with this, and possibly because he was also invested in the story as a story creator. So
yeah, exactly. And he had seen probably more episodes than any director before him or props after him, because I'm sure as a line producer he got a chance to look at certainly the episodes and maybe even some of the editing, who knows.
My overall takeaway from this episode is a couple things. Number one, the amazing job that Bob Blackman did on all the wardrobe for all the different Ferengi, just the first, season alone already, I've seen some amazing, amazing wardrobe creations by Bob Blackman. And this episode definitely has them. And secondly, all the scenes with the Ferengi, because of your rehearsal, I can see the benefits of the rehearsal, because you guys are so tight. Your timing is impeccable. Everyone's working off of each other. And this episode flowed so well for me. I really, really enjoyed watching this.
Thank you. One of the obvious examples, I was watching it and I brought a grin to my face. Everybody says human.
Yeah, human. Yes.
And that's something that I'm sure I brought to the rehearsal and said, okay, we all have to say it this way.
Right.
Yeah. Even Aaron as Nog. Even Aaron when he talks to Jay.
Yeah.
He calls him a human.
Armin, it is a bit of a derogatory way of saying it in a way.
Oh, absolutely.
I definitely feel like absolutely. This is the Ferengi
they're gonna
way.
Treat the Ferengi badly. The Ferengi are gonna treat the humans just
right.
as
you're gonna mispronounce their name entirely. Exactly. They're just humans. Yes. Yeah. I love it.
Okay, for our guest stars, we had a big group of guest stars. We had Max Gradencheck as Rom, mm-hmm. Lou Wagner as Crax. Mm-hmm.
As Crax.
Barry Gordon as...
Yes, and Barry Matt. Gordon. Barry Gordon, yes. It's important to know. Barry Gordon, I think at that time, I'm not sure, but I think at that time was the president of Screen Actors Guild. This is before the merger, so it was just Screen Actors Guild.
Oh.
And Barry was indeed the president. Producers don't like necessarily to bring the presidents of Screen Actors Guild onto a set because they're always fearful that they're going to enforce rules that normally are tripped over. But Barry was there.
And he did no such thing, correct? He didn't nitpick. He didn't do any of that stuff.
He didn't do any of that. He was a team player. Yeah. Never said anything derogatory or you know, never had a problem with anything.
There you go.
And Barry Gordon is a child actor that grew up to be both the president of the union and, ironically, stuck his foot into politics for a moment.
Oh.
There was a district in Glendale that he ran for, but unfortunately lost that, and he lost it to Adam Schiff.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Huh.
That's amazing. Well, if you're going to lose to somebody who goes on to be a superstar.
Yeah. I'm not sure Barry feels the same way, but yes, I agree with you.
Barry could have been that superstar.
Yeah.
Oh, so close.
Enlighten me. Barry played who, Robbie?
He played Neva.
Neva.
Okay. We also have
Lee Ehrenberg as Grawl.
Our friend Lee. Lee, who went to college with me. Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful actor who came back and did a couple of episodes. Yes.
We love Lee. Grawl or Brawl. What was his character?
Grawl.
Yeah.
Grawl. Mm-hmm. Aaron Eisenberg as Nog, of course. Mm-hmm. And we had Tiny Ron as Meherdu.
Is that his name or is that his title, his position?
No, that's...
I think that's his name.
On the
I
show. No. Okay. Mehardu.
Yeah, I think somewhere in the episode they talk about putting Zek to sleep and it's whatever his species, it's something that they do like Vulcans or whatever. So I think Mehardu is his name as opposed to his species.
Okay.
Well, Tiny Ron's makeup, I have to say, was super cool. I loved that alien makeup. Really cool detail in the face. Felt different than, you know, it's hard to invent new aliens and new makeups, and I think they did a great job there.
He was an enormous team player, always was, in all the episodes that he appeared in. As everyone knows now, that mm-hmm. we were rehearsing at my home before we got on the set. And Tiny used to come to our rehearsals, even though he's a mute. He doesn't ever say anything.
Yeah.
Well, that's a team player. Yeah. I don't know if you know this, Armin, but Tiny Ron showed up on our show as a member of the Hirogen species, as a hunter species, which is sort of very nomadic and they're very tall. And he was the first original Hirogen on our show. And his wardrobe was literally this huge armor thing that was so hot. It was basically wearing a wetsuit, you know, like a 5mm wetsuit. And we walked outside of stage 8 and 9 and he goes, look at this. And he put his hand down and all this sweat just came out from the sleeve. He just squeezed it out. I was like, oh my gosh.
It was a full body prosthetic, basically. Yeah. The costume was made of the same kind of rubber and layers.
Completely covered. Face was all, wasn't one piece of his skin showing. So completely covered like you were pretty much. And then everything with that wardrobe was so hot.
Last guest star is Wally Shawn. Wallace Shawn as Zek. I got a question. Did Wally come to your house for rehearsals?
He did.
Wally
came to... I think all of them, all the times that he appeared, I think he came to all of them. He may have missed one, but he didn't make most of them.
So I have to ask you this, Armin. Did Wallace enjoy playing this role? Was he in? Did you find that he relished having this role? Just give us a little bit, you know.
Sure. I'll give you an anecdote very quickly to answer this question.
Please.
So about the third time that Wally and Zek appeared on Deep Space Nine, Renee and I went up to Wally in the makeup trailer and said, Wally, we're so glad you're here. We wish you were here more often. Why don't you show up more often? And he said, and I won't do his voice, but you can picture in your mind the sound of his voice.
Yeah.
He said, it takes me 6 months to forget how much I hate the makeup.
But, very well said.
But he always did a brilliant job. I loved working with Wally all the years that we worked together, and he was terrific. And he does something in this episode where I wish he had done something else.
Yeah,
he did do it in rehearsals, but David didn't let him do it. And when we get to that scene,
you talk about that.
Okay, we'll talk about it.
Okay, I will say I love his laugh that he comes up with throughout.
And that's
this
iconographic, Zach. That laugh shows up in this episode, and it is iconographic for Zach for all the times that he's appeared.
It's wonderful.
All right, there's our cast. Let's get into the story. This episode aired originally on March 22nd, 1993.
Wow.
That was the air date, a March episode. We're in the airlock. The airlock opens up and this Ferengi looks around to make sure the coast is clear. And then this caped figure is escorted out with a cane.
And the cane or the staff has a gold Ferengi head or scepter, as it's called later at the top.
Yes, the scepter. Yeah, it's got a Ferengi head that kind of goes right by the lens. And again, David Livingston,
cool shot.
It's the details. It's very well thought out. You know, it's not just coverage. He's not just swinging a camera around and letting actors walk through the shot.
Mm-mm.
He finished that shot on the scepter, sculpture that Ferengi had on the scepter. It's very cool.
And let's not forget, Mehardu is also there.
And Mehardu, he's being escorted by this very tall, this cape figure. Is being escorted by a very tall.
Because the shot shows the first Ferengi, which is
looking around,
looking around.
Yes.
Then he motions over, and you see the head pop out of Mehardu. Is that how you say
Mehardu?
It?
Yes.
Mehardu's head pops around, and he waves him in, and that's when he escorts Negus. Well, we don't know it's Negus yet, but he's hooded, you know, at that point.
Yes. Yeah. But very, very David from the start
is
doing specific shots. Yes. He's telling the story as a director in a way that I honestly haven't seen done this well on your show yet. David knocked it out of the park. Yeah, so we go to Sisko's quarters, Jake's room, I guess, his part of the quarters. He's running around, grabbing pads, collecting pads, and trying to get dressed. And Sisko comes in and says that maybe they can go to Bajor for this big gratitude festival. He wants to take Jake to the gratitude festival.
The biggest Bajoran festival of the year.
Yeah.
And a side trip to the fire caverns, which is something that Jake has wanted to do. So this is something that Jake has already showed interest in. And he says, we can do a side trip to the fire caverns. But after finding out that trip will take 3 days, Jake asks to stay on the station. He already has plans with Nog to check out this Andorian freighter that's coming in for maintenance. It's carrying this shipment of anti-grav tractors. They want to see if they can get a glimpse of this. And the look on Ben Sisko's face is just crestfallen. He's like, oh. My son is picking a maintenance trip for an Andorian freighter over me and the fire caverns. So, but again, it's amazing how much family oriented, like father son scenes that we've already seen in the first quarter of season one, basically.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. This is a show about family. This is a show about family.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Again, I love Serac, his energy, there's a buoyancy to his performance.
There's a lightness to his performance.
A lightness that's often lacking, I would say, in all Star Trek shows.
But it's also lacking in that age too, though, Robbie.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, for his young age to be that masterful is impressive.
I love it's minor, but I just love the way he said computer orange juice. It was such a throwaway line, masterfully done by what I consider to be a 14-year-old boy. Incredible.
Yes.
Yeah. He's really incredible. He's and he's getting better and better. You can see him getting more confident,
more confident and more relaxed. Secure and more relaxed. Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to
and
see
I'm sure
more
Avery had a lot to do with that. Yeah, of he did. Making him feel comfortable.
Yeah.
We go to Quark's next, and Quark is telling a customer that there's no need for her to thank you, him, sends her back to gamble some more, encourages her to go gamble, and then scolds Rom for returning her lost purse and tells Rom he needs to go review the rules of acquisition.
The first rule of acquisition.
That's
once right. they give you their money, you keep it. You don't return
Never
it.
Give it back.
Never yeah. give it back.
Yeah. yeah. But as punishment, he orders Rom to polish every railing in the entire bar. And this is very funny because now you see him. It's a little bit of a passage of time in another section or nook of Quark's. Nog is setting up this. I guess he's kind of playing around with a tower of objects. You know, can I?
Yeah, he's stacking
this
tower,
on top of that. Yep.
I just want to go back to, you're right. Go. Quark says, go polish every rail in the place. Mm-hmm. And he also says, get out of my sight before I toss you out of the nearest
airlock. Yes.
And
yes.
that's important.
That tracks. Yes. We need to know. Yeah. We keep that.
It does. It does
true.
Seem
I had missed
harsh.
That. That is absolutely true. Yes. Yeah. yeah.
But you've it actually said that on prior episodes too. This
I
isn't
have,
the
but
only
this
time.
This episode
that
makes
that.
A major difference.
Yeah, yes, it does. It does.
So he scolds Rom, and Rom goes to polish rails and not get thrown out of an airlock. And then Nog stacking this. It's like glasses. He's building a tower with glasses and pads.
But also
or
his pads from school, too. The same pads that Jake
oh, that's
had
right.
in the first
that's right.
That sort of same color, same
so
size.
So Jake is really valuing these pads. And right. Nog is
building a freaking
using them
tower.
As
a diversion. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's great because Rom finds him, startles him. The entire tower collapses. And then he tells Nog, you know, what is this? What you learned from that stupid Federation school? You need to polish every single railing. So he passes the buck to his son, which I thought was so funny and kind of rude at the same time.
It is. And it is indicative of something that's very important to Ferengi culture that is always there, but it's never said, which is this great sense of hierarchy. Mm-hmm. There's hierarchy certainly in the military, and we see that. But in Ferengi culture, there's an obeisance that is exponentially larger than anything we see in the human society. This great sense of pecking order, who's on top, who's more important.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't connect that to the plot of this episode so specifically, but it's actually very well done. It's well structured. That we're seeing this hierarchy with Quark and Rom and Nog, and then we're going to see it when the Grand Nagus comes in. So it's repeat. It's kind of setting up the same ideas. I think that's great.
Yeah. We have a quick shot on the promenade. Another cool David Livingstone shot. I think he's on the second level, actually. Starts up there, and then it pans down a little bit, and we see the same three characters from the very beginning. The tall alien and the hooded alien and the one Ferengi walking slowly towards Quark's. Any comment on that camera angle or that shot or that scene, Robbie?
Oh, it was great. There were a couple of shots up high that I thought, again, David was just, he was telling the story with the camera and the shot selection.
Yeah.
In a way, he wasn't just covering. You know, we hear that term a lot. Oh, we got to get coverage when we're making shows.
Mm-hmm.
Coverage is not storytelling. It's just covering your ass. It's just grabbing. It's collecting shots. Storytelling is when you use that camera very intentionally. Mm-hmm. And David does that very well.
Yes, he does.
You know, as frustrating as David could be sometimes with a dozen or more takes. And you're just like, what are
just
you
just a dozen?
For? Yes, a couple dozen. As frustrating, and the hours were longer with David, let's be honest, they were always longer, but his shows turned out well.
It's not just the camera. Very few directors ever use that second level for anything. It's there. There's actually a third level as well, because it was just too difficult to light, to shoot, to get actors up there. Usually they just ignored that second and third level. David, knowing the set, probably said, we never see this part of the set. It's built. Let's use it. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. 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 And I think, you know, David in years since has said to me, like, I think he said we interviewed him on this podcast a year or two ago. And he said, you know, as a director, his attitude was get in trouble a little bit.
Which is ironic because it was his job to lecture the directors who were trying to get into trouble. That was his job, to lecture them.
Yeah.
He had to have both. He had to wear both hats.
Yeah. But he would do things knowing how difficult they were, knowing it might take more time. No, but he would intentionally push the boundaries in ways that other directors don't want to take the time. Like you said, they don't want to take the time to go up to the balcony. They don't want to take the time to do a more challenging shot, and David would do that. So
now, when you're talking about the third level, you're talking about within corks, though.
That's right.
You're not talking about in the promenade. The promenade only had the main level and the upper level, the mezzanine. Yeah,
that's right. Okay. And we're going to see an iconic shot in this show that we've seen perhaps in other shows as well, okay, of Deep Space Nine, of the two boys sitting by the rails.
Oh yes,
that became an iconic shot for our show as well.
Yeah. I love that shot.
Yeah, and when we get there, I'd love to talk about that, because that's okay, the first time I've ever seen that.
Yeah,
I wonder if that was David or if you even know. But we'll talk about it when we get there.
We move into Quark's, and Quark is telling a joke to Morn. Is Morn played by Mark Alan Shepard? Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
All right. And Morn doesn't get it in the beginning, and then of course he does catch on, and he giggles and laughs. I guess that's the most that we ever hear out of Morn, right?
It is the most we ever hear from Morn. Laughter.
He has no other line, and he is a homage to Norm from Cheers. Correct.
Absolutely.
That is the whole.
There's no question about that.
Okay. Yeah.
I like your line. Had to think about that one, didn't you?
It was at that moment when you said, "Oh, you had to think about that one, did you?" I was looking at your eyes, and I realized the reason why they stand out, they come out so much, is that they ring this dark kind of circle around your eyes to sort
purple
of hide
circle.
Yes, and not all Ferengi have that, though.
No.
So I was thinking, why does one Ferengi have that and another not have that? I'm curious.
Well, that's an interesting question, a political thing that happened there.
Oh.
On the first day that I worked on Deep Space Nine, Karen Westerfield was assigned to do my makeup. She did it exactly as Michael Westmore told her to do. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the process, she saw how my blue eyes and thought, oh, if I put purple around his blue eyes, the blue eyes will stand out more, which she did.
Yeah.
But this had not been part of Michael Westmore's design. I don't know how many days or weeks it was. I think probably only days. Michael went to dailies and suddenly realized there's a purple ring around the Ferengi's eyes. And he came down like a ton of bricks on Karen for doing something he had not designed.
Okay.
Now, as it turned out, Karen was absolutely right for the very reason that you just said.
And
because they'd already gotten it on film,
it was
several days of film, I would imagine, that they just couldn't change it. And so yes, Quark has purple around his eyes, and you'll notice Rom has a veil behind his head and Quark doesn't. And that too was part of the makeup designs. That was distinctly designed by Michael Westmore, the difference.
Well, the veil is because they didn't want to finish the back of that person.
It's not that they didn't want to.
They didn't,
because I was there when it happened.
The budget to do that.
Yeah,
that
no. The costume design department and the makeup department hadn't conferred about how far the makeup came down and how high the costume came up. And so on TNG, when I was made up as a Ferengi, when all the process was done, we realized there was a 3-inch gap of my back, of the back of my neck showing.
Oh.
And Michael went out and got a piece of material, which he stapled to the rubber prosthesis.
Oh.
And that's how the veils got invented. Yeah. Wow.
That's crazy.
That's amazing, those little details. I mean, I feel like the audience will love that. I've never heard any of that. That's really fascinating.
Because of the ring, your eyes are more expressive than any other character on the show because they're defined with the ring and they pop like that.
Yes, and I have to thank Karen.
Yeah, Karen Westerfield.
Brilliant. And Karen, it was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant makeup artist.
Yep.
And now, years later, she leads the makeup union in Hollywood.
Okay.
When they negotiate contracts, she is the person they are talking to.
Wow. Wow. Very
good for her.
Cool. Well, so after the joke, the Grand Nagus enters.
Cracks, right? Cracks calls out. Yeah.
Cracks calls out, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's looking for Quark. Mm-hmm. You found him. I'm Cracks, and this is my father, Grand Nagus Zek. And that's when the cloak is finally pulled off
back
to reveal.
What's his name? Mahardu?
Mihardu.
Mihardu pulls the hood back. I love that.
It's really an unveiling of the Grand Nagus. And it's the unveiling of the Zek character, who will come back many, many episodes. It is the revealing of one of the major recurring characters on our show.
It's a great makeup, though. It's the makeup great is phenomenal. Makeup. It's got the gray hair the
coming
ear,
out of the ears. And yes, and just great. Explain to me, because I'm sure the fans listening know this better than me, but the size of ears, is that with age or is that?
Well, so you're too young to realize, but when you get older as a human, yes. your ears get bigger too.
Yes. And your nose too, right?
And your nose
and ears.
And so the Ferengi live for a very long time.
That's right.
That we live for centuries. Yeah. So there's lots of time for the ears and the nose to get bigger.
Yeah. I see.
That was one of my questions. How long do Ferengis live? Because in this episode later, we do learn that Nega says he hasn't had a vacation in 85 years. So we assume he's a really old dude, right? So
exactly.
Okay. Hundreds exactly. of years.
Wow.
But younger than Quark thinks he is.
Right.
So the Negus arrives and Quark kisses the scepter. And then the Negus wants to sample some of the holosuites, ask Quark for some recommendations. Quark says, here's a list of my favorite five sweets. And he says he wants to try them
programs,
all.
Not sweets, programs.
Yes, or programs. Yes. Five right. programs.
Did anyone catch this when Krax talks to Quark that Grand Negus wants to try out one of the holo sweets? He said holo.
I did.
So yeah. I was like, is that a kind of homage
That's
to
a mistake.
Uman? It was a mistake. Okay.
It's a mistake.
Because it's not a holo, it's a hollow sweet. Yeah.
Yes. Right. But the Negus has his laugh. I think this is the first
this
time
the beginning
we hear
of it,
that
yeah.
laugh.
No, it's not the first.
No,
oh, that's right.
He does it in a scene before that.
That's right.
Oh.
We don't see his face, but we do hear the laugh.
We hear the laugh, and this is the first time we see him do it.
Isn't that it?
Yeah.
That's it. That's it.
The creepy laugh. Yes.
It's so funny.
We go to the schoolroom next. And now there's a ton of kids in the schoolroom. Last time I remember seeing the schoolroom, there were like four kids.
Yeah.
Including Nog and Jake. And now there must be 30 kids.
David has a way with budgets.
Yes,
breaking
he
budgets.
Does. Doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. He must have something on everybody because he gets what he wants.
O'Brien is late due to a maintenance issue that he had to handle. He is the substitute teacher. Yeah. Right. He tries to settle the kids down. Nog and Jake are still talking. He calls out their names. Jake mm-hmm. actually stops, but Nog is still talking. So he calls Nog out and he asks to see Nog's completed homework essay. And Nog says he doesn't have it. Because his pad was not eaten by dogs or some type of alien animal, but it was stolen. So O'Brien says, oh, do you have any idea who could have stole this? And he said it was some Vulcans nearby.
And then he asked Jake. Yeah, well, Nog says, Jake can vouch for me. You see Jake like, wait, what? Don't bring me into this. But Jake reluctantly does basically vouch for him. He's like, sure. I was there. They took it. So Jake's getting dragged into the dead end kids side of things.
The ethicless Vulcans that stole that pad.
And ironically, it was an essay on ethics what it was.
Because they have no ethics?
Yeah, no.
I'm just going to put this out there. I don't want any discussion about it. But I will venture to say that the Ferengi are the most ethical people, species on the show. I will explain that more later.
Okay.
Okay. We'll just leave that there.
We'll leave that there for you.
Even though in the last episode, they pushed the cheat button. But yes, I...
but see, that's your ethics, not their ethics.
Exactly.
The next shot is awesome because we hear Grand Negus's laugh because we see Tiny Ron standing guard in front of the holosuite on the upper floor of Quark's holding Zek's cane, and we can hear Zek laughing inside the holosuite, which is awesome. Camera pans down, another David Livingston awesome shot, pans from that second level down to Quark, who is concerned about Grand Negus's welfare because he's been in there for such a long time. He doesn't want him to die from pleasure, basically.
Yeah, I don't think that's the reason Quark is upset, but yes, go ahead.
Okay. He walks over to Rom and tells him that he suspects that the Grand Negus is here to buy the bar.
Yeah.
Negus comes out and wants to rest. Quark offers Rom's quarters, his brother's quarters, to Negus. I love that little
hierarchy.
Yes, the hierarchy is in play here.
I also like that Negus comes out and needs a drink because he's dehydrated from all of the
His
pleasure.
Son gives him the little glass and he brushes that away and grabs the whole, you know, carafe and drinks that from that, which is awesome. Yeah. He's so parched from all his nookie. And then Negus wants an invite to dinner as well. That's the other thing that comes out of this scene. And again, yes. Great shot. Really, really good shot by David Livingston.
Yeah. We go to the turbo lift next, and Miles is working up in ops, working on fixing the turbo lift that's like stuck halfway between floors. Again, David Livingston gets the camera down in the yeah. bowels of that thing. So yeah. we see for the first time that I can recall,
yeah.
the top of ops. I never saw that before.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. The set was gorgeous.
He's showing off what the carpenters and the set designers have built that yeah. no one has showed off. He knows the set. He knows the place very well, and he yeah. wants people to see what he sees when he steps onto the set.
Yeah. He again, first director that is showing me the set this way, and I thought it was beautiful. But Miles is fixing the turbo lift. And then Cisco arrives and says, you know, the airlock's jammed again. They got to get on that. And then Miles kind of climbs out. They start to talk. Cisco asks how school's going. And Miles basically gives him some advice. He says, keep Jake away from Nog because he's trouble.
Yeah.
And Cisco replies, well, I don't want to make it me versus Nog, right. you know,
because first he says he trusts his son. He goes, I trust my son.
Yeah.
And that final dialogue back and forth is my favorite part of the scene, because he says, it would become me versus Nog, and I'm not going to force Jake to choose between us. O'Brien says, why not? Cisco says, because I'd probably lose. O'Brien says, I doubt that, sir. And Cisco ends with the best line, probably in this whole episode. I love this. That's because your daughter's 3. Wait until she's 14. And I'm living through that now. So I was like, yes, I know this. So I love
that. Wait until she's 14, and then wait until she's 34. And then...
But again, see all family. The changes. It's all about family. It is. These are family issues.
It is. Entirely.
It's true. Mm-hmm. We go to Quark's quarters. It's dinner. And the first shot is this bowl of grubs.
Yeah.
Real grubs. These are real worms with the chopsticks or something. And then it cuts up to Tiny Ron tasting one of them. I'm sure not a real grub at this point. They did a little switcheroo.
So he's the royal taste tester, just in case.
He's
a
taste
poison.
Tester. He's like, chews it up, and then nods to the Grand Nagus, and then Nagus eats away, and he loves them. And the Nagus seems very impressed with what he's heard about Quark at this point.
As he should be.
The chopsticks, whose choice was that? And I was then almost inferring that maybe Ferengis are supposedly an allegory or a parallel to Asians. I don't know. You know, I don't know. So
yeah.
I've often thought that. Garrett, I think we can get into this later, but I've often thought there's a possibility that it could be of Asians, but I have a larger theory about who the Ferengi reflect. But I've always said, after the show was over, if I had it to do over again, I would have studied Chinese culture a little bit more for a better understanding of the Ferengi culture.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very specific choice to ask the actors to use chopsticks to eat their meal. Right. So it's definitely,
I wonder if though, a lot of times the props guys would just pick something that looked cool.
So it's an arbitrary choice.
It could have literally been an arbitrary choice that we are imposing.
We are imposing our own will onto it. Yeah.
Because often, especially with food stuff, they just mix together. There was always a strong Asian influence on Star Trek food, always, whether it was Japanese culture, Chinese food.
Yeah.
The exotic nature of Star Trek food, in my opinion, had a very strong Asian influence.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe it was a choice, or maybe it was literally.
Also, there's a problem. There's just a financial problem, which is if you get a fork or a spoon, it has to look futuristic.
Oh.
Chopsticks don't.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it could have been just that. It could have been that. If I were betting on this, I would literally say it was random. It was just like Armin said, doesn't have to look futuristic. It looks kind of cool. We're mashing things up.
But the other interesting thing is, Armin, you're going to probably agree with me on this. When you talk about Ferengis, you talk about this is a species or a race that is a group of individuals or beings that are concerned about profit above all, right? And there is that parallel with Chinese. And that's why I thought the chopsticks were there too.
Now you're getting into what I wanted to leave for later. I always think that the Ferengi reflect the minority culture. And there are stereotypes not only about Chinese, mm-hmm. but a lot of cultures. It's the other that is the avaricious culture. We are the good people. They are the not so good people. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the Ferengi in a sense reflect. I can't tell you how many times I've been around the world where various cultures have said to me, are these the Chinese? Are these the Jews? Are these mm-hmm. the Irish? Are these somebody else? And I smile and think, we're all those, you know, it's the minority culture.
That, that analogy, the other, that's yeah. very well put, because yeah. you kind of put that, yeah, the good guys and the bad guys. We're the good people. They're the ones.
They're the
who
other.
Are,
they're the yes. other.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What I took away from this scene, Armin, was when I was watching the other people eat, Rom. And Negus' son, they were eating Prax. They were eating beetles. Now, when Rom eats the beetle, it crunches apart in his mouth like it is a dead beetle, like a real. That was a prop, yes?
I saw that scene, and I'm desperately trying to remember whether it was that episode or another episode where. The director offered each of us at the table, it was a similar episode, we were all eating beetles, and he said, I need a shot with one of you actually crunching the beetle. It may have been this one,
but it
may have been another one as well.
The legs came
off
so
realistically. And all of us said, no, I don't want to do that. They asked me first. I said, nope, I'm not going to do
that.
I'm not eating a beetle.
And Max raised his hand.
Max, I'll do it. And
it sounds like something David Livingston would ask, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what David Livingston would go, I need a real beetle.
I could see David goes, you don't have to swallow it. You don't have to swallow it. Just bite into it. You can hear his like manicness, right? Going,
right.
Just bite into it. It's fine. Max, can you do it? Great. I love you. Okay,
and I can promise you, whether it was this one or another episode,
yeah.
whatever that take was, whatever that day was,
yes.
it was only one take of that.
Yes, I would
it was
think
one
so.
Take of that.
Sure. Yeah. But is that the Ferengi diet, though? Is just grubs and beetles? Is there, you guys don't eat anything other than.
I imagine we eat other things as well, but this is a delicacy.
It's for the Negus. It's only for him. Okay.
Well, so the Negus is there. He's very impressed with what he's heard about Quark, but then he hears that Nog is going to a Federation school, and he does not like that.
Yeah.
With the humans, and so
and a female teacher again.
Yes,
bad.
Yes, Rom forbids any more school. Then the Negus says that he needs Quark's bar for some kind of conference, some kind of gathering for the Ferengis to discuss.
Now, first he says, "I need Quark's bar," which puts the fear of God into
it. Yeah, Quark is like, "I told you, that's what I knew. This was it."
The very last shot of this, though, I found interesting because the last line. Zek is saying for Ferengi business interests in the future is already here.
Yeah.
And its name is the Gamma Quadrant. It's a real kind of buttony line.
Mm-hmm.
And so David was pushing in on Wally Shawn.
Oh, yes, that's right.
But then it cut back to Quark not pushing in.
Yeah.
And I think David intended for that shot to push in on Wally Shawn.
Yes.
And that would be the out. But when they did the edit, everybody thought, no, we got to go back to Quark.
He's the series regular.
Series regular, but the shot wasn't moving. So it was almost like, it's the end of the scene, the end of the scene. No, it's not. It was.
Yeah. They should have stayed with just Wally. They should have stayed with Zek.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Good catch.
We go to Ops next. Kira informs Sisko that all these Ferengi are arriving. And Sisko's not very concerned at this point, but he does call Odo to keep an eye on him. This is another overhead shot in the promenade. Where we see, I think it was maybe Cracks or someone walking through the promenade.
Power
walking. Yeah. You see the whole promenade, but then it pans right up to a nice close-up of Odo when he says, I'm already on it. Great job, David.
It's a good shot.
Again,
yeah.
It's
good
a
job,
great
David.
Shot.
Good job.
Storytelling. It was good. We go to Quark's. Quark's nervously preparing the room for this gathering. And Crax is looking at the seating arrangements. He does not like where people are sitting here.
Yeah. Rivals are being sat next to each other, which is not
good. Yes. Rivals are being sat next to each other. Grawl, we meet here. He's getting very impatient that the Negus is not here yet. Negus finally arrives, calls the meeting to order. Quark kicks Nog out, by the way.
No, well, he wants to leave too. Quark wants to leave.
Quark yeah. wants
he
to
figures
leave.
It's a yeah. It's a corporate Let's meeting.
Get out. That's right. He kicks him out and he's gonna we're all gonna get out of here.
Yeah.
But then the Negus tells Quark to stay. That's right.
Your reaction's great, Armin. You're like, me? Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm going to be yes. in on the inner workings. I'm going to know how the sausage is made. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
But also, there's a sense of I don't want to be there because of the hierarchy. This yes. is not a place yes. for me. No. I want to be involved in a lot of things, but yeah. this is not a place for me.
These are all the big yeah. bosses. These are all yes, the big bosses big. Of the Ferengi hierarchy of business, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's yeah. right.
Okay.
Yeah, so Quark sits at the bar away from everybody else, and that's where the scene ends. Then we go to the promenade. This is where Here Nog is sitting over the balcony edge.
Yeah, with his, his legs dangling there. Over the side, yeah.
I think we have seen that in another episode. I believe I've seen it, as we've been doing these shows together. I believe I saw it in an earlier episode.
Maybe.
But certainly, this is an enormously iconographic shot.
Yeah.
We will see the two boys together in this position often enough.
Yeah.
It is their place. Everybody has an office. I have a bar.
Odo has an office. Hanging out in the
their
promenade,
place is hanging right
everybody.
There in the corner of, this, of yeah. the second level.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember seeing it before, but I know that it landed for me. Whatever David did differently in this episode,
he had their
landed.
Legs swinging.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, storytelling of these are young boys.
Yeah. 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 Jake finds him. Nog tells Jake that he's done with school. And basically, they start to bicker very quickly.
I feel like this is their first argument ever. Yeah. You know, in a way. So yeah.
Nog calls Jake a stupid human. And then Nog storms off.
And Jake has the last word, though. He goes, I'm stupid. You're the one not going to school. See if I care. So again, teenage
You're stupid.
Angst.
I'm not stupid. You're stupid. Yeah, they're very young boys. Yeah. Very young boys. Mm. Go back to Quark's. Negus is talking about business is great in the Alpha Quadrant, but their reputation is what's holding them back.
Right.
Their reputation that they can't be trusted. Mm-hmm. And he says the Gamma Quadrant is a blank slate. Nobody knows about this reputation there.
Didn't he say it's like the good old days all over again, boys?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And he lets everyone know that he's chosen a successor.
Deep Space Nine touched upon a lot of subjects that other shows hadn't touched upon, at least up until that moment. Mm-hmm. And here is one of them. We're talking about business ventures, which is certainly part of every commercial culture. And this is the first time, even if it's by Ferengi, that these are serious. The cheating, of course, is that's comic.
Yeah.
But the idea of how to progress your business in an adverse situation, how do you do that? And here's an opportunity. Let's take advantage of the opportunity. This is, I think, business. This is why, if I may, I've been told over the course of many years that some business MBA programs will include the rules of acquisition in their business forums because wow. there's actually some credence to some of these rules and how they approach business in general.
That's awesome. I love
Is
that.
There, let me ask you, I know we keep digressing into tangents here, but the rules of acquisition, was this something that got created like...
I believe it starts in this episode.
Wow.
So the idea of it starts in this episode.
Yeah, I think so.
And then is there a book?
Like yes. someone published sure it?
Yes, yes, yeah. it's a published book. Yeah.
Okay.
There are, I remember, I believe I have this number right. I think there are 225 rules of acquisition. That's what we say. There are 200, maybe 250, but it's somewhere in there.
In the 200.
But there is only about 115 published rules because Ira and company never got around to writing all the rules.
To writing the rest. So they wrote it. So the writers came up with these rules of acquisition. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. This is, I got to get the copy of this book.
I will give it to you the next time I see you.
I can't wait. The Grand Negus announces that he's chosen his successor. He announces to everyone that the new Grand Negus is Quark.
But as he's about to say that, his son is getting
yes,
up
yes,
to stand
very
up,
nice.
Which is
yeah.
awesome. Yeah. Yes. Crax is like, it's me. And then he's like, huh? Yeah.
Yes. He talks about this new leader has vision, imagination, and will oversee all the Ferengi ventures in the Gamma Quadrant. It's Quark, and they are stunned. Grawl calls him a lobeless amateur. Krax thinks his dad lost his mind. Nava says he's not going to stand for it.
The bosses leave. They knock the chairs down. They just take off. They're like, mm-mm.
And I love at the end, you're playing with your earlobe at the end. Yeah. I love that. You did a couple of things like that.
Yeah.
Where I know this prosthetic has no sensitivity, no feeling. So,
right.
So that sort of, you know, the nervous ticks like that.
It's not so much a nervous tick. It was a choice.
Yes.
It is our erogenous zone as well. So there's a little bit of masturbatory.
Yeah, I was just about to say you're pleasuring yourself in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow.
Robbie.
So many levels that it works on.
Look, ear nookie. It's a thing. Yeah. All right.
We go to Cisco's quarters next. Jake is just playing with his oatmeal. He's just stirring the cold oatmeal. Cisco asks what's wrong, and Jake says that Nog is not going to school and doesn't want to be friends anymore. And Cisco says, well, you know, human values and Ferengi values are very, very different. And he invites Jake to play baseball after school, but Jake says no, he's got something he's got to do.
Yeah.
And he seems like he's got like a light bulb moment. I got to do this, but we don't know what it is.
Right.
And neither does Cisco. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Cisco is playing this whole thing so well.
He is, but he's not trusting Nog. He really feels like there's some type of nefarious thing happening, right? I mean, he's not.
But he's being patient enough.
He is being very patient.
Play
yes.
out and
yes.
not jump in too quickly.
Yes. Yes, correct.
Certainly at this point, the offstage relationship between Avery and Serac had matured. And I think at this point, Avery feels very fatherly towards Serac. Mm-hmm. And so he's I think, very involved, both as the character and as the real pseudo father to Serac.
Got it.
Well, we go to the promenade. Quark is very excited to be the new Negus. Grawl kind of joins him on this little walk and talk. Says that they're going to be new best friends and that Grawl will protect him from all of these others that are very jealous and could be a danger to Quark. Mm-hmm. And you can see Quark start to panic. He never thought about, like, you're a target, I guess, when you're this powerful. Grawl is sort of blackmailing him in this scene. Bottom line is he's letting him know that there's danger from other people, but you never know where it could come from. So you better treat me right. So he's blackmailing him there.
Well, he threatens him, really, right? It's more than blackmail. Yeah, it's like
I'll
not going to refuse.
You. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay,
it can be very dangerous.
Yeah.
So we go to Rom's quarters. Quark is terrified in here, and he wants Zek's advice. Zek says that this threat is not going to be the last. And then suddenly Zek freezes. He freezes. And Tiny Ron checks him. And it looks like he's dead. At first I thought he can't be dead. Like, that's not with the hands sort of stuck out. I was like,
no, it's like a dead beetle.
Yes.
he turned into a dead beetle.
Yeah, he just froze mid-sentence.
But he did give a couple of words of advice out.
Yes,
right?
He did.
Surround yourself with people that are loyal, but not too loyal. Never trust anyone who places your prosperity above their own. And then, and remember, when in doubt, be ruthless.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I can do that. And that's when he kind
and
of
then he freezes
the
like a beetle. Armin, I loved the button of the scene, the last line Quark has it, where you look around and you say, I didn't do anything. I thought the timing, like you took the pause, the timing and the line reading was perfect.
It was great.
We go to Quark's bar again. There's a portrait of Zek there. Clearly, this looks like
the memorial service,
a memorial or something. But there's a stack of these green, like
circular
petri dishes,
cases, yes, with the covers
and,
on them.
Yeah. It's like his ashes or gelatin or whatever
Ashes.
Mm-hmm. His ashes are being sold as collectibles.
Part of the Ferengi culture. Many things in this episode are beginning to tell us about the Ferengi culture. This is one of them.
Is it ashes? Because he says, Krak says, you see, when a Ferengi of my father's stature dies, the body is automatically vacuum desiccated and sold as a prize collectible. So it may not be ashes. It's not ashes.
I thought of it as ashes, but you're right. It could be
desiccated is like dried out, like a desiccated fruit, right? So he's basically shrunk down and chopped up.
Because there's lots of...
Lots of matter, biomatter. Yeah, it's really gross.
Let's not talk about desiccation anymore.
But listen, in the Catholic Church, there are relics of saints.
Saints?
Exactly. So it's not that far off.
Okay. No, it's not.
Okay.
So these things are being sold. Odo arrives and wants an autopsy done to make sure that no crime was committed.
Right.
But
that's
he can't
what
Craig
says
because,
what I just line. Vacuum desiccated.
He can't do it because it's been cremated, basically, version of that, right? Krax is very defensive, though. Krax says, there's nothing suspicious about my father's death. It was caused by a massive infection of the tympanic membrane, a chronic condition. So,
which is
legit.
Very funny, actually, because to me, I should look it up to be sure, but tympanic means ear.
I think it does.
And so I thought that was clever, very clever.
Yeah, a massive infection, ear infection. Odo cannot do his investigation here.
When Rom comes up to Quark in this scene and he says like, well, now that you're Negus, what about your bar? I could take over, right? And then that's Quark has that huge hysterical laugh about you run my bar. And that's when Odo comes in and says, not exactly overcome by grief, are we? Like that's the middle of that scene, but still a really funny moment of you laughing.
It's very funny. Yeah, you do a spit take with the drink and then the laugh.
Oh my God. That was
but
great.
Rom is really getting, the short end of the stick here. I'm now that I'm reviewing this, we're doing this together. Yeah. I'm realizing he had a lot of, a lot of reason to make the choices he made.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He's treated very badly by his brother. Absolutely.
And this is the episode where the, the straw that broke the camel's back is this episode for Rom.
Yeah,
I look at it.
We go to the promenade. Nog and Jake are in silence. Their feet are dangling up there. They both really want to be friends. They kind of reluctantly and in their youthful way say to each other, they want to be friends and they don't want their fathers to stop them. And then Jake has an idea and they run off together.
Right.
So a sweet little scene. It seems like they're going to work this out, but you don't know if Jake's going to be getting in trouble, if that's the way they're going to work it out, or it's a little mysterious, but great.
It's a lovely moment. It's a lovely moment that leads to a very lovely resolution.
Yes, agreed. We go to Quark's again, and Quark is really feeling cocky at this point as the new Negus. He's pretty confident. He's pretty full of himself.
Well, once you have a cape on,
superhero. I'm a
superhero. You're
a superhero
now.
You're telling Odo to kiss, it's tradition, Odo.
Kiss my cane.
Kiss my cane. Odo walks off, does not want to kiss it. And then Quark sees some change fall on the floor.
One coin rolls into his view,
And he's like, should I get that?
He puts his foot over it, right, to cover it so no one else can see it. And then he looks around and then drops down to go pick it up. But that exact moment, that
weapon
flies over his head.
Somebody's trying to kill him.
Yep.
We come back and they're examining the crime scene. There's Sisko, Miles, Odo there. Miles explains that this was a Ferengi device, explosive device that locks onto a particular person's body odor, their pheromones.
Yeah. A Ferengi locator bomb. That's what they call it.
Now, and Ferengis have a particularly strong BO, or is it just...
I don't think we ever came across that again.
Again? No. Or is it a signature?
I don't know. No, I think it was just a way to, stigmatize the Ferengi, but I don't know.
Exactly.
Here's the thing. If Ferengis were extremely stinky, I don't think anyone would come to your bar. You know what I'm
saying?
So I really feel like it's the pheromones. Like I cannot, if I'm standing next to Robbie, I can't smell his pheromones. Okay.
But my pheromones are very powerful.
They're
right. And as you know from a previous scene, the Ferengi like to brush their teeth. So there's that. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. So they've got good breath. It just seemed odd that it locks onto a person's body odor.
Yeah.
I don't know. The way it was worded to me, I was like, it felt like it was implying that they have, they need deodorant or something. Bashir arrives finally.
My
favorite character.
Your favorite dude.
Finally.
Team Bashir for Robbie.
Team Bashir. He arrives. He says he's been treating Quark and that they should come, talk to him. And they head on their way. Sisko, as they're walking out, Sisko sees Jake and Nog running and sort of laughing together.
Yeah.
And sort of has a moment. I guess it's concern. It was hard to tell. It was like,
I think it's concern. I think it's concern. I mean, remember O'Brien says to him, if I were you, I would separate
exactly.
The
separate them. Yeah.
But like you said earlier, Robbie, he's still letting it play out, right? He's just going to see, I'm along for the ride. Let's see where this takes us. So
let's see. He's trusting his son enough to let him play this out, whatever's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, he could have easily called him and said, hey, Jake, come here.
Yeah. But
but he didn't. Nope. He was patient. Go to the infirmary. Odo and Sisko are questioning Quark about who might want him dead.
Odo's first line, when are you going to get it through your twisted little brain that we're trying to save your life? I love that beginning opening line right there. Sets the tone.
And Quark doesn't want to talk about it because the Ferengi are family. Mm-hmm. And this is family business.
Yeah.
And
you're not gonna air
the
your
outsiders
dirty
do not.
No.
Yeah, we're not going to air our dirty laundry. Exactly right, Garrett. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't want to talk about anything outside of his family. This is family business. You guys have no right to be intruding into this.
Yeah.
And I will deal with it. Or Quark will deal with it in time.
Yeah. Yeah. And he kind of says, everybody's got a reason to kill me, but they were all at the funeral. So I can't help you with your investigation. Right. You kind of try to shut them down. But we do learn that Zek's servant was not there.
Was not at the memorial service, exactly, which is very out of character that type of species,
servant.
Right? He's servant, a Hyperion. Yeah. Is he Hyperion? Yeah, Hyperion servants
like
are renowned for their devotion to their employers, is what Godo says. So for my Hardu, not to have shown up at Zek's funeral is very odd indeed. And that is the last line of that scene. So now we know something is afoot. Something is afoot.
Mm. Yes, that manservant. Tiny Ron is very suspicious.
He is.
MacGuffin.
Suspect it's number MacGuffin. One. It's a MacGuffin, yes. We go to Sisko's quarters. Sisko wants to know why Jake was out so late with Nog. Jake says he can't tell him. And Sisko respects this, again, very patient. But he says, I want you home on time tonight.
Yeah.
Fine. You don't have to tell me.
For dinner.
But I want you home for dinner.
Yeah.
Yes. Understood. So he is, creating an expectation here and getting agreement from Jake. Like, let's get back on track here with the rules. And
I like the pause that Sirach took when Sisko said, understood. And there definitely is a pregnant pause. And Jake very reluctantly. And just the way he played it, it was just like, understood. I mean, it was kind of defeated in a way, right? Kind of low key. But again, a good choice on Sirach's part.
Great. We go to Quark's again. Quark is holding court at this point. He's handing out permissions for businesses and getting a split for himself. So he's playing hardball, but he's starting to, basically give out territories and agreements with everybody on who's
this is
got
your
what.
Scene with Barry, right? Barry's talking about giving,
yes, Barry's, Barry's there in front of me. Now, I hope you all caught that's a pastiche from The Godfather.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
God dang it. I should have known that.
It's definitely a pastiche of The Godfather. I mean, they gave me a cat. It's not a cat, but
what was that thing?
That puppet?
Yeah,
we don't know. We never saw it again.
Animatronics?
No. It was a puppet. There was a guy underneath the desk manipulating the puppet as I stroked it.
All right.
But the blinds are drawn.
Yes.
The look of it is from The Godfather.
Oh, yeah. Very,
I'm doing
very
this
obvious.
As well.
To me, you know what that thing looked like? It looked like a tree branch. Like a tree branch or like a yam or something, something, some type of vegetable.
Giant yam.
Yeah, or some misshapen carrot.
I have a pet yam.
Do you have a pet yam?
I have a pet sweet potato.
Okay.
But,
that's nice. So yeah, I mean, he says you come to me and you didn't do this for me. It's right out of The Godfather. It is The Godfather.
You're right. This is the Godfather scene. Okay.
Okay. So after he finishes these permissions, Quark heads to the bar. He leaves, and Rom and Crax are left there, and they're very worried because Quark seems to be, handling this really well, and he's going to be popular.
But he's also giving away the best opportunities, which means they're thinking they will be left with nothing. So that is what they're thinking.
Well, I don't know if they both will be left with certainly Crax will be left with nothing.
Right.
I think Rom really only wants the bar.
Right.
And
but he's laughed in his face, though.
Exactly. You know, right? Exactly. So he's not going to get what he wants. Crax's not going to get what he wants.
No.
They have a grudge against the new Negus.
Yeah.
Yes. And Rom explicitly says at the end of the scene that he needs a new plan to kill his brother.
Which, no again, question. Was shocking that he had this resolve. I'm like, what?
I know. It's very Godfather-y at this point.
Oh, yeah. He's Fredo. Okay.
Sisko's quarters. Sisko's got a baseball glove. He's kind of tossing a ball, waiting for Jake for dinner. Dax enters, and they talk about Jake here, and Sisko asks for advice. Dax says, go find him and bring him back to dinner. Sisko asks the computer to locate Jake, and computer says he's in Cargo Bay 14. Mm-hmm. So Sisko heads over to Cargo Bay 14. He goes in, he hears some voices, kind of walks a little deeper, and there he sees Nog and Jake sitting on some barrels at a distance. They don't see him, but he sees them. And they're basically, Jake is tutoring Nog.
Teaching him how to read.
Teaching him how to read.
Yeah.
And that's why Jake wouldn't tell, because he didn't want to embarrass Nog.
Yeah.
So Sisko puts all this together. He's very touched, clearly. Yeah. It's a very sweet scene.
And he doesn't interrupt. That cool shot. He's in the shadows and you just see his face back out. He's like, I'm done. Okay. My son is an upstanding young man. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Right. And it is also, I mean, not only is Jake doing the right thing, which is very important, that Jake is, in Ferengi language, is a mensch. This is also the beginning of the arc, the incredible, wonderful, amazing arc for Nog.
Yeah.
That Nog is beginning to move away from Ferengi culture into Starfleet culture, which will eventually do wonders for him. There is no character on our show that had as big an arc as Nog does.
Yeah. Mm. That's awesome.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, we go to Quark's quarters next. Rom is preparing Quark to head to the Gamma Quadrant to meet all these new business opportunities, I guess. Go there. And Rom asks Quark one last time if he would share some of the bar profits. And Quark's response is, well, this is the way it was meant to be. I was just supposed to have more than you.
Hierarchy.
Yeah. And so Rom hears that and says, okay, let's go. And I love this last exchange. I do want to call out David Livingston's shot making here. As Quark leaves, we see Rom with a mirror behind him, and we see Quark in that mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all, there's no shot back to Quark. It's all played off in the mirror.
Yeah.
You see Rom in the foreground and Quark's reflection right over his shoulder. Beautifully shot, really elegant and cinematic.
Nice job again, David.
Yeah, and he probably asked for that mirror. My guess is that the set didn't have a mirror. Yeah. Usually we try to avoid
mirrors. I don't think we ever had a mirror.
Yeah. No. This was David Livingston telling the set designer, put a mirror over there so that when Quark walks away, I can keep in
catch
that one
his
shot.
Reaction there.
It's great. Mm-hmm. David gets, two thumbs up. 10 stars for his direction in this. Really well done.
Yeah.
We go to the promenade. Quark's on his way to the Gamma Quadrant. He thinks about maybe taking a Dabo girl with him. Crax says, no, you don't need it. And so they continue on. Crax and Rom.
Before you do, another wonderful shot from David. He set it up so that we're talking about a Dabo girl, and there's just enough space so that we see the Dabo girl in the distance.
That's right.
She is part, even as we're talking about a Dabo girl, one Dabo girl is in the shot, so we can actually see what they're talking about. And obviously he kept us apart so that you could see her in the background. Another, I think, wonderful shot by David Livingston.
Yeah, he did a phenomenal job.
Also, while this is happening, Odo kind of tracks Mahardu. Mahardu's walking around on his own, going into this airlock. Yeah,
this airlock opens. Mahardu comes through. Yep. Then it shuts. You see Odo walk up to the same airlock, but then
he turns into the goo to get
into. He goes down below frame.
Which I don't understand that shot. I don't understand like that special effect. Why is he doing that? Why?
Because he could just open the door.
We don't see him try to open it. We don't, and it's an airlock. There shouldn't be any way for him to be able to sneak
it. It's totally sealed.
Through. I don't care how much Uzi is. Right. Yeah. There's no way to get through an airlock. It's like they spent $20,000 on a special effect that I think is just worthless, is useless. Maybe David wanted one and therefore got one.
You think this was David's one little faux pas for this entire episode?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I just thought, why is he doing that?
But it doesn't make logical. Yeah, push the button. Mahardu just opened the door and shut it. Why can't you?
Why do you have to turn into ooze?
Don't show off, Odo. Just open the door like everybody else would.
We do go to this airlock corridor where Quark walks in, and then they shut the door behind him, and now he's trapped in this airlock. He's wait a minute, there's no ship here. He looks around, and then he realizes they've trapped him inside this airlock. Rom says that Quark was going to toss him out of an airlock, and Quark says, no, I wasn't serious about that.
I was just kidding. Yeah.
Just as they're about to press the button.
But before they're about to press the button, there is that same please that we heard in Move Along, Little Doggies, and Move Along Home.
The same gesture.
Yes, the same gesture.
Please. Is that like begging? Is that like was that the intention there?
Praying and begging.
Praying and begging at the same time.
Great. That's great.
It's pegging if you're praying and begging.
Okay, pegging.
That was pegging.
I think pegging's something else, but not for this podcast. Anyway. Okay, we go to the airlock corridor where Odo's arriving with Grand Nagus. He didn't die. All of those ashes and things were counterfeit. Those people need their money back because he didn't die. Yeah. So those...
Good luck on that.
Exactly. The Grand Nagus says he didn't die, that it was just a test for his son, and his son
to
failed.
See if he was ready, right, to take over, and he failed miserably.
Because what he should have done is just let Quark run the show up front, and he could have hung around the bar and gathered all the information about the Gamma Quadrant, but instead he failed. So they're going to go home.
And I think that's actually good business advice.
Yeah.
I think that's actually good business advice. Let somebody else take the blows while you sit in the back and run the show. I think that's excellent business advice.
Agreed. Well, I will see when I get your copy of The Rules of Acquisition, Armin. I will see if that advice is in there.
I don't think it is, actually.
We can add it. There's a new
rule of acquisition. Okay.
Exactly.
As Zek is admonishing his son Krax, I just love when he says, "Go back to the ship. We'll be leaving here shortly." And Krax says, "Yes, father." And after Krax leaves, Zek's final line is, It's like talking to a Klingon.
Now that's the line. That's the take that David and the administration chose. There is a much, much better take. One that put me on the floor. I was laughing so hard.
Oh, my.
It was a brilliant take. And it's so totally not Star Trek that they couldn't use it. But when I saw Wally do it, I was beside myself in laughter. It's the same line.
Yeah.
But instead of sort of looking over to the side, he looked straight into the camera, broke the fourth wall, and said, "It's like talking to a Klingon." And I just love that. It's like forget about the show. I'm just talking to the audience. It's like talking to a Klingon. David said, we can't use that. We can't use that.
He basically Ferris Bueller'd it right there, right into the camera.
That's
my God. That's actually really funny, though.
It was hilarious.
It would have been amazing if they had had the guts to use something like that.
Right? Oh, my God.
Oh. Wow. Okay, so we go to Quark's. We go back to Quark's. Quark's giving the Grand Nagus back his scepter. The Nagus is very happy with how Quark has done, and he even says, "Maybe I'll be able to come back one day and buy your place."
Yeah.
So that's a compliment, I guess, you know.
Yeah,
the Nagus thinks it's a good business. Quark tells Rom that he wants to promote him.
Before he said that, he starts with saying, he's like, you know, "So Rom, you were going to toss me out of an airlock, huh?" So you think, as the audience, that this is the time where he's going to he's going to disown his brother, right? Yes. Rom's backpedaling. He's like, forgive me, brother. And Quark says, forgive you? Why, brother? I didn't think you had the lobes. And you actually are impressed with the fact that he had some gumption.
Yeah.
He had the, you know, the will to try to, you know, outdo you, which is amazing. Right. Yeah. So you promote him.
How did you feel about this plot, Armin? I'll be honest. I didn't buy it. I know that the Ferengi, and it's not the performance, it's the plot choice. It's right. a script problem to me.
Right.
I feel like there's, even though the Ferengi have hierarchy, I get all of that. But when someone has, you know, made an attempt on your life, it's got to give you pause. And I struggled with this. It does.
You know, it's supposed to be a comic moment, and, yeah. and we hopefully played it for its comic moment.
Absolutely.
But you're right. It doesn't really make sense. It doesn't fit into Ferengi culture that they do hold grudges. Yes, it doesn't play really.
It just didn't
well.
Ring true to me. I felt like there was an opportunity to really go deeper into their brotherhood.
Exactly. And they will in episodes to come.
Oh, good.
And I think this is, you know, the writers, like the actors, are feeling their way. They're trying to,
yes.
they still are influenced by the yes. Ferengi from TNG. There's mm-hmm. still there's a number of things, even in this episode, where I go, well, that doesn't track. It doesn't track.
Well,
I'll get to that in a moment. But
okay.
So, yes, this is, I think, one of those where it's yeah. meant for comedy. It's
totally.
It's not meant for rationality.
Yes, but it felt like it felt a little like a situation comedy. Like,
yeah,
wah, wah, look at all yeah. that crazy stuff we went through. Bum, bum, yeah. You know, punchline.
Right, as though none of that counted. The same thing with Move Along Home. You go through an episode, all of this happens, and then at the end you find out it doesn't count. It wasn't
yeah.
serious at all.
Yeah.
I think the writers are going to do much better than that in the future.
I'm sure. I have no doubt.
But you're absolutely right.
Our very last scene in this episode is on the promenade. Jake and Nog are making plans to meet again, I guess, for this, you know, reading lessons. And Sisko sees Jake, and he calls him over, and he gives him a hug, kisses him on the head, and mm-hmm. says, you know, you're a great boy. Go play with your friend. I almost teared up there.
Yeah,
the authenticity of that, and the fathering that Sisko, the way he fathered and the way he showed respect and love, yeah. It was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, speaking about tearing up, I almost teared up when he found him teaching him to read. That was the point that I got emotional for sure. But I also feel like that kiss on the head was not scripted. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that was Avery's choice to do that. You know, and it was a great choice, really good choice.
Beautiful, yeah, really beautiful, especially for, you know, a man, a father to kiss, to be that tender.
Yeah.
You know, he's not punching him on the arm and going, man up or something. It's not that kind of thing. He's being tender.
Yeah. And it really shows a three-dimensional character.
There you go. The Negus.
The Negus.
The end.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If I had to take all the stories and say, what do they have in common? The lesson I took from all the stories is you can't always assume that you know what's really happening. Like Sisko thought maybe there was trouble, but in the end he realized it was something beautiful and he didn't need to be worried. You know, Quark assumed that the Negus was dead and he didn't really know what was going on. He didn't know what Rom was planning. He didn't know a lot. So, you know, verify before you assume that you know what's
the whole
happening.
Story, the whole picture.
The whole story.
Right.
Yeah, that's my lesson here.
Armin, what is your lesson?
I wrote down, navigating the waters of family politics can make for a stormy voyage.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm.
That fits all the stories as well.
It's about family all through this episode, the larger family of the Ferengi together and the smaller family of the Siskos together. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, the growing family of Jake and Nog. It can get bumpy, but, you know, if you get through it, you'll eventually come to a nice place.
Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, just going to further what your lesson was, and never assume, because if you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. That's what assume does. Mm-hmm. Okay. So no assumptions. So mm-hmm. I agree with you on that, Robbie.
Great. All right. Awesome. Okay, everybody. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode, The Negus. Next week, we will be discussing and reviewing the episode Vortex. And for all our Patreon patrons, you know, thank you so much. Stick with us. Your support means a lot to us. And we've got a lot of bonus material that we want to share with you. We have questions. We do our ratings. We talk about scenes that we think should have been in the episode. So if you're not a Patreon patron and you want to be a part of all of that and hear what we think and hear what the Patreon patrons are voting on and discussing and what they think, get involved, join Patreon at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers. Become a part of this community. It's an awesome community and a lot of fun.
A family, so, we might say.
It is, yes, like a family.
It is a Delta Flyers family. And on that note, I'm going to leave everyone with Zek's laugh.